Monday, July 25th, 1999. I'm Claire Brazil, and I will be interviewing Miss Nanny Brazil about her early years at Alpheta Camp. Miss Brazil, would you please state your birth dates?
My birth date is August the 28th, 1916.
Okay, and your father and mother's name, please.
My father's name was William M. Stanland. My mother's name was Katie Smith Stanland.
Do you remember what year your family moved to Alpheta Camp or somewhere around the time that they moved there?
In 25.
Okay. And do you remember where your family moved from before coming to Alpheta Camp?
We moved from Kent County, Dayton, Texas, Kent County, to Diboll, and then to Alpheta Camp.
Just in your words, could you tell us what you remember about the early years in the camp, and go back and reminisce back as what you from the time you came there as a little girl through the years.
When we first moved to Alpheta Camp, we lived in a boarding house. Ms. Bonner ran the boarding house, and they had just built a boarding house, and there was no tenants in the boarding house at all because no one without families had come in and gone to work there. So they let us live in the boarding house and use as many rooms of it as we usually used, about four or five rooms, because there was such a big family of us. And we lived there until the men that didn't have families started coming in and going to work there, and they had to have the rooms for the men. And then we moved into a boxcars that was set on a siding there for people to live in. We used two boxcars, and we slept in one, and we eat and everything in the other.
Do you remember what the racial makeup was back in those days?
There was, I would say, a dozen or more families of colored people there, but the rest of them were white. I mean, there weren't any Hispanics or anything that I can remember there. Of course, I didn't know there was such a thing as a Hispanic at that time. But there was no Hispanics there at all.
Okay, just the
just the white and the colored family.
Okay. Where did the children go to school, or did they attend school there at the camp?
Yes, they had a schoolhouse. I would say it was about a 30 by 40. I think that's what I told you a while ago. Mm-hmm. But we all went to school in the same house, had the same teacher and everything. And she taught all the classes for each grade. Of course, it wasn't but a few of each one. And she taught us all. And I don't even, Miss Russell, I believe, Wood Russell, taught there one or two years, but she's the only one I can remember the name of.
Mm-hmm. What about church? Do you remember anything about church there?
We didn't, there wasn't a church house there. When we had church, we had it in the schoolhouse, and that was only when a preacher came through to hold a revival or something. We would have church in the schoolhouse, and if it was too cold, to have it outside, or if we had it outside, they'd build an arbor if it was warm enough. But we usually had it in the church because it's usually winter time when they came through.
What was your father's occupation there at the camp?
He was a log cutter. He cut logs with a cross-cut saw at that time. Why, that was the only saws they had. There was nothing like a chainsaw or anything at that time. So he cut them. They cut them with a cross-cut saw. And each one had to have a partner, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they cut the logs at that time.
And the hours, do you remember anything about the hours that was spent in a day's work? Was it daylight till dark 30, do you remember anything about that?
He would leave before daylight every morning, and most of the time it was after dark, after the children were already in bed, before he'd get home. So some days, some weeks, maybe we'd see him two or three times if he happened to get in a little bit early or something. But otherwise, he was in the woods working most of the time.
Do you remember about the size of the camp back then, about how many people approximately made up the camp?
Well, at that time, I would say it would have been between 150 to 200 people, maybe, at that time. Of course, I never counted them, and I didn't know for sure, mm-hmm. but at that time, it seemed to be about maybe 150 to 200 between that.
Do you remember some of the names of the families that lived there at that time?
Yes. Benny Brown and his wife. Deb Brown and his wife. Arthur Brazil and his wife, Hazel, and Seth Parker and his family, and Ms. Sean Bishop's family lived there, and the paymaster, his last name was Camel. I don't remember his first name, but it was Camel because I went there to pick up the check a lot of the times for my father. And it was Stovall run the commissary at that time. And the doctor there's name, his name was, last name was Evans. I never knew his first name because we always just called him Dr. Evans. And we was all sick with malaria and such as that because of so many mosquitoes and things. Mm-hmm. And we had quite a bit of illness on account of that. And then did I get Hazel and Arthur Brazil? I think I did.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yeah, I think you.
And then there was a tailor, Bill Taylor, and his wife lived there for a few years, and of course they were families moving in and out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in the boxcar for about two or three years until they built some little houses. One of them was two kind of large rooms. They wasn't large, they was about, maybe they were 12 by 12 or something like that, and then there was a little shed rooms built on the back, which the children used for bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, now, the doctor's office, it was the location of it, was it inside the commissary at that time, or?
No, it was to the right of the commissary.
Okay.
It was a passenger car, because he was one of the high society ones, you know. It was a passenger car, and used one end of the car for the doctor's office, and the other end was the pharmacy. He sold candy and stuff in there too, but it was in there that he had the pharmacy. And on the left side, there was a little ice house, maybe, and I'd say about a 6x6 ice house on the left side of the commissary.
And this is where everybody was able to purchase their ice then for use there at the camp, right?
Yeah, that's where they purchased their ice, if they were able. We purchased it once in a while on the 4th of July to cool a case of knee-high soda water for our celebration. And once in a while, we'd have a watermelon for that. If people had some around, they raised some around there.
So, ice was really a luxury in those days.
It sure was. I mean, it was a luxury.
And how did you all get your food? Did people come through there selling the vegetables and things that you had to eat, or how did you go about getting the food there?
Well, just the staple foods we got at the commissary, but the fresh foods came from little places around the camp there that raised such as corn and peas and watermelons and sugar cane and things like that. Well, we bought that from them, and sometimes they would deliver them down to the camp in a buggy. And sometimes we would go out to the places where they raise them and got them ourselves. And fresh eggs, too. We would go out there and buy fresh eggs from those people outside the camp.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember what year that you actually, your family moved from the camp?
Well, I was 13 years old when we moved from there, and I was about 8 when we moved there. So that would make it
anywhere from 30 to 31, possibly.
Possibly then.
When your family actually left Alcedar Camp. Do you have any other stories or some maybe funny things that happened there that you would like to share with us?
I have one that's very funny, I think. We didn't have inside plumbing, of course, and we lived on a knoll. Where we lived was kind of up on a knoll, and they built their outhouses down below there on a slanting place. And one of our neighbors, which was quite heavy, went one morning to the outhouse, and the outhouse turned over with her. So she had to call for help to get out, and some of the people that lived around there heard her hollering, and we went out and helped her straighten up the outhouse so she could get out.
And so her voice of distress was heard, and she was rescued, huh?
That's right.
You know what Alice is,
huh?
You're getting it on here.
Is there anything else that you can possibly remember that we haven't gone over that you might could just think of that you would like to get in the interview?
Well, when we moved from Alcedar Camp, my mother had just about taken all of it she could. So she got her kids and what little groceries she could carry, and we walked from Alcida Camp to Dybar. 9 miles with all those little kids while Papa was in the woods working. So, and she wouldn't come back to Alcida Camp, so he had to come to Dybar and start the work. And he found a house in Dybar and moved our stuff back to Dybar, and he went to work for Southern Pine and different jobs that he did there before he went to the box factory where he worked till he died. Was at the box factory that Southern Pine had built.
So your life as a child up has always been connected with the logging profession and on to the old box factory, the first box factory that was actually built, and up until you married and through the years, you've always been associated some way with the Southern Pine and then with the Temple.
Absolutely. My husband was a logger for all the years that we've been married, and now my two sons has taken over the business, and they are loggers and have been loggers ever since they got out of school. So we pretty well been in Southern Pine with Southern Pine most of our lives.
They have big logs.